Welcome to Series 15, Episode 5 with Callum Howe. Callum joined York City in the summer of 2023 during a period of huge change at the club as the Ugler family took over. Across his three seasons, Callum has lived through the ups and downs, culminating in one unforgettable moment, lifting the trophy on the pitch at the Crown Oil Arena as York City clinched the title in the most dramatic of endings. Here we speak exclusively to Callum about his career, his time at York City, and every last detail of that epic promotion season. This episode is sponsored by our longtime sponsors, the Nearly Departed app for iPhone. If you travel by train, you need Nearly Departed. Whether you're traveling to work or to an away game in League 2 this season, Nearly Departed will help you get there by providing live updates for your train service. The app has been carefully made by a York City supporter, and you can get 6 months free by entering York as the discount code in the Apple App Store. So download Nearly Departed today, ready for the next time you travel by train. This episode is also dedicated to the memory of Ian Frame, who was a huge supporter of the club after being introduced to the Minstermen by his wife Mary in the late 1980s. The West Stand has lost a much-loved member of its community. We would like to pass on our condolences to the Frame family and dedicate this episode to Ian's memory. But for now, here is Series 15, Episode 5, with Captain, Warrior, Leader, Legend, Mr. Callum Howe.
So, Callum, thank you so much for agreeing to speak to us on York Hospital Radio. It's the first time I think I've ever had a title-winning captain on the podcast, so that's a first for me. So, first up, how's your pre-season going? Are you a fan of pre-season? Is it a bit like being the first day back at school when you join a new club?
I wouldn't say I'm the biggest fan of pre-season now, but, you know, it is what it is. You've got to use it to get fit and ready for the season.
And I know some people want to get to York City a bit straight away, but I always love to hear about the kind of journey that gets people to York City, and yours was kind of far from straightforward. I was sort of having a little look at your early part of your career at Scunthorpe. I know you didn't make an appearance, but it wasn't quite as straightforward as that, was it? I delved into some sort of articles and realised that you were the only person taken on as a pro from your kind of youth team. You were very highly thought of by the looks of it, but from the outside, it seemed like it was hard for you to ever get anyone to take a chance on you because managers kept changing all the time. Is that kind of how it was?
Yeah, like you say, I was the only one to get a pro from my year in the youth team. So I did a couple of years, I ended up doing a couple of years with the first team. I was on the bench quite often, but the season where I was on the bench most of the season, the two centre-halves were doing really well, and, you know, I managed to stay fit all season. So obviously I never really got my chance, but yeah, we ended up getting a promotion that season, which obviously showed how well they was doing.
And you spent a lot of your early career out on loan, didn't you? I counted 7 spells sort of across your whole career. You went as sort of far north as Gateshead, as south as Eastleigh. Do you think that sort of made you the player that you became then, sort of working with different coaches and managers, than if you just sort of stayed in one spot?
Yeah, well, when I first came through at Scunthorpe, that was a thing as a centre-half, you know, when you've not played any games, you struggle to get people's trust. And I felt like, you know, I got advised by a few different managers who were at Scunthorpe when I was there, saying, like, you know, you need to go and play men's football, prove yourself kind of thing. And my first loan was actually Brickley, which was quite a few leagues below. But, you know, it was a real eye-opener for me. It's probably one of the best experiences I've had in football, to be honest. Being in a different environment, it was totally different to me. You had to grow up pretty quick. And then I had a few different loans, like, say, Gainsborough. Then my next loan, I managed to get into the National League. Like I say, I went to Gateshead for a month, but I played the first 2 games. Then I had an injury and went back. Got myself fit again, went back out. I had loans at Alfreton, where I played probably my first real chunk of games in the National League.
And when you say it sort of makes you grow up, a lot of people say that and say men's football. What is specific about it that's different?
Just a lot more physical, you know, when you've been youth team, reserve gear, like you played. When I was at Scunthorpe in the youth, they had a reserve side, so we'd play, you know, Tuesday nights, Tuesday afternoons. Sometimes you'd be getting away from school to go and play in reserve games, which is obviously a great experience. But I think when you go into actual first team playing for 3 points and stuff is a lot different. It's a lot more physical. Probably didn't realise how physical it was when I dropped down to Fricker the first time.
And you mentioned there about Gateshead, that was under Gary Mills, wasn't it? And you scored an equaliser away at Forest Green on your debut. Now, I naively presumed it was a header, but I found the highlights of it, and it was absolutely
No, it was a
cracking
volley.
volley that you scored. So I wonder what was your memories of that goal, and what was it like playing for Gary?
Yeah, that was an experience in itself. The first time I went down to play with him, we actually stopped off on the way down to Forest Green on a Friday. We travelled down on a coach and we stopped off. I think it was where he was from originally, like a local pub. And the lads got off the bus and he said to, he's like, all the lads are ordering pints and stuff. And I'm thinking, like, I didn't really know this was a thing. And he said to me, oh, what are you having? I said, no, I just have a water. And he said, no, if you don't have a pint of Guinness, you're not playing tomorrow. So I've laughed it off thinking, like, nothing of it. But he was being serious. So I ended up having one and yeah, I scored the next day, so I probably should have stuck to that.
And after you left Scunthorpe, you went to Lincoln City, didn't you? And you were part of a team that won promotion to the Football League. So how was that experience so early on in your career?
A good experience, like you say, another different environment. I think for me, that's what I'd always advise young lads when they're coming through, just to go and play as many games as they can in the first team. You know, if you're not getting in a squad or you've had a long time on a bench and you're not playing, I just think it helps mould you.
And you had a spell at Port Vale as well, didn't you? And again, looking from the outside, it seemed like that kind of didn't work out for you. But Harrogate certainly did. You know, that was a crucial move in your career. I know you were only there one season, but I think you scored 9 goals in 48 games. The team made the playoffs. You were voted Players' Player of the Year. And you were sort of established then as one of the sort of top central defenders in the league that year.
Yeah, that was probably the year where I played pretty much every game that season for the first time. Because, like you say, I'd had different loan spells and been on the bench throughout different seasons and stuff. So that was probably my first year where I played every game and I really got into like a rhythm of playing. And yeah, I really enjoyed my time at Harrogate, to be fair. We had a good year, missed out on the playoffs, like you say, but I managed to do well myself personally that year, scored a lot of goals and ended up with my move to Solihull.
Yeah, and that was, I think, a club record fee for Harrogate to receive. So, and I think I'm right in saying that you played then on the first game of the next season, didn't you? That
Yeah,
must have
we
been a bit
did, yeah.
surreal.
Yeah, it was a bit of a. To be fair, I knew the Solihull interest was there through pre season. So I was at Harrogate doing the pre season and I only had a year left on my contract at the time. And I just bought my first house. So I was trying to get a bit more security. And they would basically said to me, like, I can't have any longer on my contract. And Solihull offered me 3 years. So eventually it got sorted in the end. But yeah, I don't think it got sorted until probably the week before the season started. So I weren't there long before I was going back to Harrogate to play the first game.
What sort of reception did you get?
A few boos and stuff like you do, but nah, to be fair, it weren't that bad. A lot of the fans kind of understood.
And 4 seasons at Solihull, another very successful period of your career. I think you had over 100 appearances, made National League Team of the Year, and so close to getting to the Football League as well, losing to Grimsby in the playoff final. I mean, for a club of that size, when you consider the sort of population of Solihull, it's an incredible achievement, isn't it?
I really enjoyed my time at Solihull as well. The club's a really good club. You know, everyone's close there. It's tight knit. Like you say, the fan base is not the biggest, but you do get the regular supporters, so you kind of get closer with them as well. Yeah, we had a good few years there. Like you say, we got beat in the final, which was probably my toughest day in football, to be honest. You know, when you got all the family there, and yeah, you feel like you've let them down a bit. But we actually played really well that season. We had a good. I think we went unbeaten for like a ridiculous amount of games and stuff, and you know you just get the feeling where you're going to get it done, and then doesn't happen on the final. It's tough to take.
I was looking, you were like 10 points clear of Grimsby in the regular season as well. So that's the lottery, isn't it, of the playoffs, I
Yeah, that's the
suppose.
playoffs. To be fair to them, they finished the season strong, and you know what they did in the playoffs that year was pretty crazy.
And you scored in the semi-final, didn't you, against Chesterfield? And I noticed Jeff King was playing for Chesterfield that night as well.
The playoffs were weird that year because. If I'm right, it was after COVID. I think the season finished and it was a bit like the year at York where we had a bit of a gap in between the games. But luckily for me, my son was actually born on the Saturday between the season finishing and the Saturday when we played the playoffs. So yeah,
Yeah.
it was a nice few weeks actually with the birth of my son and then scoring a goal the week after.
Very special memories, I'm sure. You know, I was looking as well, like that Solihull team sounded a little bit similar to York City in that you had clearly had a great team spirit. You scored a lot of goals as well as a side. It obviously was a special time to play there.
Yeah, well, I was very close with a few boys there. You know, I had a good few years there, so I still speak to quite a few of them often.
And the following season, you played York City in your first home game of the season. You were man of the match. And I know that because it was my uncle who gave you man of the match because his business sponsored the game. I just wondered how much you remembered about that sort of game and battling with Lenny, because I think it was quite a close game.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think. Did it finish 1-1? Was it
1-1,
1-1?
one, yeah.
Yeah, I do remember the game. Yeah, it's always a physical battle against Len, you know. Obviously, I didn't know him personally at that time, but I played against him quite a few times.
And you also played in the Solihull side that won at the Elliniatta later in the season. But after 4 years, obviously, York City came calling. I presume that must have ticked a lot of boxes for you, with it being sort of back up north, a club with ambition as well.
Yeah, definitely. It was a bit out of the blue, really. Again, I was back in pre-season at Solihull and I've not really heard about anything. And then I got pulled in the office at Solihull and said, "Look, York have come in for you. What are you thinking about?" And I said, "To be honest, I didn't even know anything about it. I need to go speak to my agent and find out." And then, yeah, it took a few conversations and I ended up going to meet Matt and David Stockdale at the time to have a chat and got it all sorted from there.
And when you've sort of played at the Elliniatta and you played at a stadium like that, do you, as players, sort of think, "Oh, I'd love to play here in the future," or do you not kind of
Yeah,
think like that?
I played at the old stadium a few times as well and always felt the same. And then you go to the new ground, you know, how it feels bigger, more modern. It was, yeah, even the away changing room and stuff's nice there. So when you go in there, yeah, it does have that effect on you.
And I almost think that opening game of the season at Wealdstone kind of summed that team up, really, at that around that side. That first half played quite well, showed quite a bit of promise, but couldn't quite keep up for the 90 minutes. And you were sent off in the second half as well. I think the only time you were ever sent off for York, so it was just a bit of a,
Yeah,
you
weren't
know, the
great
first half
starts.
was what could have been, and then the second half was kind of almost the reality of the situation.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, I remember the day well. We did actually start pretty well, didn't we, on the front foot and that. And then they grew back into the game. And then it was a bit of a tough day for me, really. I got sent off, and then I found out my granddad had passed away that day as well. So my first red card and that. So, yeah, that's another memory.
I suppose the only way is up, isn't it? And you were one of many players that signed that summer, weren't you? So when the results are not great at the start of the season, you're probably thinking, you know, this might just take us a bit of time to gel. But at what point did you sort of think, "Oh, we're actually struggling here"?
For a good part of that season, I think we were thinking like it's going to click, we'll be all right kind of thing. And as it goes on and on, you start, you know, the doubts start creeping in, and it's tough when you go through them times in football. You know, it's a lot different to when things are going well, just around the training ground and stuff, trying to keep people upbeat and going. And yeah, like you say, it went right to the wire, didn't it? So it was a long old season, that one.
And a lot was made about at the time about the recruitment and things not quite clicking. Obviously, Mikey Morton left and Neil Hardley came in, but you'd obviously had a lot of success with Neil Hardley at Solihull.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
why did it, do you think it didn't quite work out for him at York?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I feel like sometimes things just work and fit, and then other times they don't for whatever reason. But, you know, as players, we had to look at ourselves because, you know, the manager's not out on the pitch playing the games, you know, and we kept trying to drill that home. Like, it's us that's got to get us out of this mess. And yeah, thankfully, we managed to stay up.
Yeah, and we'll come to that sort of staying up shortly. And we'll also come to the highest point of your kind of York City career soon as well. But the lowest point, I would imagine, will have been the Altrincham away game,
Oh, yeah,
humbling
definitely.
6-1 defeat. Was it just kind of like whatever could have gone wrong did go wrong? I mean, you were captain that night. I just wondered, what was it like in the dressing room afterwards? Are you the sort of captain that has got the confidence to sort of call people out, or is it just everyone gets their head down? How does it kind of work after something like that?
One of the toughest nights I've had in football, that we didn't play well, don't get me wrong, but it seemed like everything was just going against us that night. And it was tough. Yeah, after the game, we definitely had words. Everyone had words. You know, we knew it weren't good enough and we let the fans down. That was a disappointing thing to see. Obviously, the fans as angry as they were, which was fully understandable, but you know, we knew we had to put it right.
And you did put it right a few days later against Aldershot. I
Yeah.
mean, you must have felt a lot of pressure in that match after such a devastating result and performance at Altrincham. I mean, confidence must have been really low at that point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you could see around the group like lads were, you know, deflated and short on confidence and stuff. But we managed to find something that weekend, and I think it. You know, I look back and I think maybe that night was probably, in a way, one of the best things that could have happened for a real like wake up call for the boys. And we went on a decent run after that, to be fair.
And of course, Lenny gets the vital win of that game, didn't he? It was your
Yeah.
assist as well. Did you have a little word in his ear when he came on?
No, not really. I remember the corner coming in and I just thought I've just got to, it was kind of going away from on goal, so I just thought I've just got to try and direct it into that area. And like I say, as I turned and saw the ball going over, I saw Lenny arriving, and I just thought there couldn't be probably anyone more perfect to be coming in at that time.
And what was the change room like after that game? It must have been such a massive relief to sort of know that you're still in it, because at that point, I think if anything other than a win, you felt like the kind of writing was on the wall, really.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it was a relief, but it was also like we knew we still had work to do, so we weren't getting carried away. It was more like, you know, we've got a bit of character about us now. Now we've got to finish the job and make sure we stay in the league.
And a lot of character for people like Ryan Fallowfield, who I think was playing centre half, wasn't he, for the
Yeah, that was
first
the
ever
first time
time,
he
and
came in. Yeah, you know, Fowles is a top lad, top pro, drives the standards every week. And yeah, I remember before the game when he got told he was playing centre half, and he's coming up to me saying, "You're gonna have to talk me through this one. I've never played there." Panicking, but you know, look at him since he's played there a lot of times now, and looks like he's played there all his career.
and I feel like you sort of relish that, talking people through game. I always felt like at York City, and even when you're at Solihull playing against York, you're always quite a sort of vocal leader on the pitch and telling people where to be and organising defence and people in front of you.
Yeah, I just think, again, I got taught when I was younger, the more you talk, help others through the game, it also helps your own game, kind of thing, trying to organise the structure of the team and, you know, more off the ball probably for me, just trying to make sure we're defensively sound.
And I've said this a few times before to people that I think what was most impressive in that sort of great escape, as it was for York City, was the style of football that you guys started playing. It was sort of most teams that are down at the bottom and fighting for their lives will go more direct, will go more ugly, they'll try to slow things down. But kind of after the Altrincham game, it was like a switch was flicked and it was like, no, we're going to play attacking football, we're going to do it this way. And it seemed to pay off. But I don't ever remember any other teams in a relegation battle doing that.
Nah, to be fair, you don't normally often see it, do you? But Hinch at the time said, "Look, if we're going to go down, we're going to go down doing it the way I play, and I'll take it on the chin if it doesn't work." Yeah, to be fair, the lads stuck to the plan. Like you say, I think we played some good football them last few games. Attacking football created a lot of chances, and yeah, it definitely helped.
And that sort of created the blueprint, didn't it, for kind of Hinch, I guess, going forward. And following season started really strongly. I think for you personally as well, you are now established as the team captain. And when Hinch came in, there was this idea that we'd sort of win every game 4-3, like sort of old
Yeah.
Kevin Keegan style. But the amount of clean sheets was really impressive. For a side with an attacking mentality, how did you manage to sort of stay so strong defensively?
I think it was a mixture of both us dominating a lot of the ball and stopping teams from having possession and making chances. But again, we spoke about the lock-in a lot at the back, just making sure, you know, we're obviously free-flowing attacking, but there needs to be at least two, three of us behind that, locking it out and making sure that teams aren't countering on us. Teams did off counter on us a few times, which is obviously normal, but you just got to kind of accept that that's going to happen when you're playing that way and almost prepare for it.
Can't remember which ex-teammate of yours said to me once that I almost sort of said, oh, Callum Howe wins every header at a corner, you know, that the opposition are taking. And he sort of said to me, that's because you don't mark anyone. You were kind of left free. Is that right? To sort
Yeah,
of
I
like
think
just
it
go and
was
attack the ball.
yeah, to go and attack the corners on defensive corners, yeah. And then to be fair, free kicks against them, wide free kicks and stuff, we were more zonal, so I just try and zone myself where I thought the ball was going to go.
And during that season, you know, early on, you get partnered with a young lad initially on loan from Cardiff. How quickly do you realise people like Mal are as good as they are? You know, is it in training? Is it in games? Is it sort of moments in games?
I think it was the first game he came on at Welton away, wasn't it? And obviously, I didn't know anything about him. He'd only signed a day or two before that, and we spoke a few times. But yeah, I think after that game, he came on, and you could see how athletic he was and dominant in the air as well. And I was thinking, you don't really get that too often in this league with young players. And like you say, the more I played with him, and I can't speak highly enough of Mal, he's probably one of the best partners I've had at centre half. I think he's got everything, and I think he'll go on and have a great career.
And I think if you were to ask any sort of York fan of their favourite away games in their lifetime, Halifax away would be up there for most people from that season. Over
Yeah.
2,000 away supporters behind that goal, two goals in injury time. Were you kind of thinking around that time that the sort of stars were aligning? Particularly, I think it was the same week that we'd beaten Barnet at home 3-1 as well.
We was on a good run again. Like I say, that was a complete opposite, and confidence is high going into games, you know, thinking we're going to win every week. And yeah, you do. I'm one of them. I never get too carried away. I try and take it a game at a time. But obviously, when things like that happen, you do start to think, like, is this the time?
Obviously, all had your team photo on the pitch as well, didn't you? And it did feel
Yeah.
like at that time that it was kind of only going to end, the season was only going to end as champions, but it didn't. And when the reverse fixtures of Barnet and Halifax came in the same week, that was in February, it was a 3-1 defeat at Barnet, 2-2 draw at home to Halifax, who scored the equaliser.
One last chance, maybe. Could there be? Armstrong's picked it up in the box. King's got opportunity to get a ball delivered. It's a great cross from King. It's a great header from Howe. Whoa! There's the equaliser. late drama against Halifax once more. It may just be an equaliser, but what a time to do it. 90 plus 9, the head of Callum Howe.
Well, I'd say if anyone deserves a goal today, it's Callum Howe. Colossus at the back, great header. As soon as it went in the box, you were hoping it was going to land to either him or John Lewis.
But is that the week that the sort of title slipped away, do you think?
Yeah, we obviously made it harder for ourselves that week. We weren't thinking it was done, you know, we just thought we probably made it harder for ourselves now to claw it back. But I don't think we ever lost the belief that we was going to be able to claw it back until it, you know, mathematically wasn't possible. But yeah, when you look back, probably that was the week what probably dampened our chances.
And of course, you know, your last minute header against Halifax in front of the South Stand was a great goal, but we can't not talk about another great goal he scored before the end of the season, which was in the 7-2 win over Aldershot.
Pierce. Oh, lovely back heel into the path of Calvert. Yes. That is a beautiful goal. That is an absolutely sensational goal with the work of Howe and Pierce combining. And we equal 6 goals. It's the most we've ever scored at this stadium. York City 6, Aldershot Town 2.
And that arguably is the pick of the bunch as well. I mean, what a run by Callum Howe. Had absolutely no right to do that. Won the ball on the left-hand side and then just kept running and running, didn't he? Great ball back by Ollie Pierce. And yeah, then it comes back to Callum Howe and he finished it like an Ollie Pierce.
You know, I watched it back earlier and I never tire of watching it back, to be honest. You know, you win the ball back on halfway, and that's kind of like your job done, isn't it? Normally you would just give it to an attacking player and pass it on. But what made you sort of keep going? Talk me through what was in your head.
I remember nodding it over the top of the striker and going around him, and it sat nicely for me to like kind of drive into the space. And I played it inside to Ollie Pierce. And I think because we were up in a game and we were pretty comfortable, like we've been playing well that day, I just thought, I'm going to follow my pass here. And then Oz touched it outside. And I remember him saying to me after the game, I can just remember someone shouting, reverse it, reverse it. And he's saying, like, in my head, I'm thinking, is that Cal shouting? I've reversed it and seen you running through. And yeah, obviously, I've bent it into the far corner. It's probably my favourite goal.
And I'm sure it will be for a lot of York fans as well. And it was a great ball, wasn't it, from Ollie?
Yeah,
he's such a clever footballer, isn't he? I think people from other teams will see his goals, but not realise that he's got such good football intelligence, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's so intelligent the way he plays. The pockets he picks up, the passes. I know he scores a lot of goals and strikers are normally greedy, but I wouldn't even say he's a greedy striker, really. I think he's happy to assist and do whatever's right for the team.
So we went into those playoffs on really great form, didn't we? And, you know, particularly after that last home game against Aldershot. You mentioned earlier there was a bit of an extended break between the games to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Do you think that was a big factor here? Or, again, was it one of us that everything that could have gone wrong against Oldham did?
I do think the break had an effect on us. Yeah, I think it was nearly 3 weeks between the games, which is a long time without competitive football. You can't really recreate a match scenario. So it was a long wait. And I think they obviously had a game before that to get ready for the game. But again, on the night, we weren't good enough. You know, there's no excuses from us on that front. We didn't perform on the night, and that was another tough night, one of the toughest nights I've had in football as well.
And I wondered whether that was sort of doubly disappointing for you, because, you know, it would have been a chance for you to right a wrong at Wembley after being so close with Solihull as well.
Yeah. It does come back to that feeling again. Like, I've felt the exact same as the one in the final. They're tough to get over. It takes a long time to get over them type of games when you come out the wrong side of it.
And again, what's the dressing room like after that? Because that must be different to the Altrincham 6-1, where people may be blaming each other and stuff like that, and your confidence is really low. Whereas that, you've sort of gone into the game confident and then come out.
Yeah, I think with things like the Altrincham one, you've still got a chance to put it right. But with these games, like, once it's done, your chances are finished. So I think that's why it hurts a lot more, knowing that, you know, you could have done more on the night.
And so to last season and a tremendous title race and the battle with Rochdale, yeah. Obviously an early managerial change with Hinch going and Stuart Maynard coming in, but things remained relatively similar to the year before, you know, winning lots of games, scoring lots of goals. You're a key part of the team. But then your game time sort of hampered in it by a couple of concussions. I think Carlisle and Morecambe.
Yeah.
You know, when a player's got a broken leg and they come back, and I imagine they can sort of try to avoid 50-50 tackles, but you're someone who can't really avoid headers, can you? It's a huge part of your game, particularly with your magic hat on. So that must have been really difficult to come back from. What was your kind of mentality like coming back?
Yeah, the first time in the Carlisle game, I didn't actually feel it in the game. It was strange. It was after the game, after I'd come in and, you know, we obviously won the game that night and played really well, so everyone was buzzing and that. And probably after 10, 15 minutes of being in there, I just started to feel a bit, I had like almost pins and needles in my arms and stuff, and went and seen the physio and the doc, and they were probably saying, look, you might have had a bit of concussion in the game, but now you've stopped and everything's worn off, you might be feeling it more. So obviously went through all the tests and the protocols and stuff, and the doc said to me, look, we think you've got a concussion, you're going to have to stay the time off. But that one, I probably didn't feel right for a couple of days, and then after that, I felt all right again, so that one went too bad. But the second one, when I was obviously fully cleaned out and I had the big egg on my head and I was dizzy for quite a while after that one, and it probably did shake me up a bit, thinking, you know, like, I've got to come back, and like you say, I had a lot of balls and it's a big part of my game, so it probably did take a while to get over that one.
And what was that first header like when you're back after the concussion?
I mean, you can't head a ball for a while after it happens, but you have to do all the protocols in training, you know, get to that stage where you're ticking it all off before you come back to play. But again, in training, it's a lot different to in match scenarios when you've got people coming across trying to smash you. And so, yeah, I think in the game where I did come back and the first one, I think you just build up your confidence again, knowing that, you know, I've got through that all right, feel fine. And then eventually, you know, you just get back into the routine of it and you kind of forget about it.
And the title race was just phenomenal, wasn't it? I mean, to have two teams pushing each other for the whole season, both getting over 100 points and facing each other on the last day. How much were you as players sort of thinking about that potential final day in advance? Were you sort of thinking it's going to come down to that, or were you thinking it's unlikely, or what was the sort of thought process?
The thought process was kind of like, if it does come to that, it comes to that. Like, we'll deal with that when it comes, but let's just keep ticking the games off. I'd say to the lads, just take it a game at a time, keep ticking them off, get to where we can get to, and if they match us, then fair play to them. And yeah, obviously they did that, and the last day was set up.
And would you be sort of checking the scores of our games, sort of half time, full time, straight away? You know, like supporters would do. How does it work?
Yeah, you know, coming in from games, you'd always hear off someone who either weren't in the squad or a member of staff or whatever what their results have been.
Must have been, I suppose, so up and down, weren't it, without when they sort of drop points and then when we drop points. And so on. And obviously, I was thinking earlier that your kind of role had changed here at this point, hadn't it? Because of a concussion, you were then struggling to get back in the team, but you obviously still had a massive role to play. You're still club captain, you're still coming on in games, but you're used to playing every week, aren't you? So it must be different to sort of being sub. Like, most of your career, you've been in the side, haven't you?
It was certainly different for the second half of the season, but I think in my head I always had, look, I just want to get promoted. I want the club to be promoted, for me to get promoted. The boys, you know, we were so close as a group, and I've been at the club for a good few years, so I knew how much it meant to everyone around the club. And yeah, obviously I had to put the team first in that situation and take a different role where be a calm head when people are getting a bit uptight about things, about the situation, how it's developing. And it was different, but like I say, I won't change it because we got promoted, so...
Yeah, and you could tell that promotion was obviously something that meant a lot to you, because I remember being at Tamworth, you know, that one of the last away games of the season, and, you know, you came on, I think, for the final sort of part of the game and putting blocks in and putting your head on the line and all that sort of stuff. And then when we won, you know, you came over to us supporters and we're punching the air, and you could tell it was, you know, your passion was massive there. You were really obviously delighted to kind of get another 3 points on the board.
Yeah, nothing changed in that sense. I wanted 3 points every week. I was willing to do whatever I needed to do on the day. You know, the gaffer knew that. I always said to him, look, whenever you need me, I'm ready. Obviously, Zach was playing really well, so I had no complaints there. He came into the side, was brilliant. So with that side of it, nothing changes. You just want the best for the team.
So the first time since 1989, a title decided between two teams in England. And just give us an insight into that week, what the build-up was like, you know, the day itself. Were you calm as a team? I know you probably knew you weren't going to start the game, but as captain who's experienced and you've been promoted before, I imagine, you know, there's a need to be a leader in that situation.
It was a long week, I'm not going to lie. The build-up, obviously a lot of conversations all week, people talking, lads would be getting phone calls off everyone asking about the game, and you just try and keep focusing yourself. And, you know, I did try and keep a calm head around the lads. Obviously at home, it was ringing around my head in an evening, like, it's all come down to this game, we need to get it done. But I think we were pretty focused, to be fair, on the way we went about things. I don't think we didn't change anything. You know, the lads were still playing cards on a Friday on the bus like we always do, and keeping everything similar. Yeah, it was just like I said, it was a bit of a long week waiting for that game. You just wanted it to come.
Were you calmer because, you know, you'd beaten them twice as well already earlier in the season,
we knew,
once in the cup and once in the league?
You know, the game's, you know, it's coming, but everything's in our hands. So it was kind of just keep focusing on us and do what we do.
And the game itself, you know, it was so tense, wasn't it? I felt like I lost half a stone just watching it in the stands.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I can't imagine what there must be a nervous energy getting built up for someone like yourself on the bench.
Oh yeah,
and...
yeah. Even sat on the bench for the first part of the game, I was probably more nervous then watching on than when I actually came on the pitch, because you can't really affect it, like you say. But yeah, there was definitely a lot of nervous energy around the place. You could feel it in the stadium coming from both sides. It was a bit of a cagey game first half.
And you come on 75 minutes and the game's obviously still at a stalemate. What's your instructions from Stuart then as you enter the field? What's he saying to you?
To be fair, he just said to me, look, come on and do what you do. You know, be a leader, organise, see us through kind of thing. And, you know, at the time I'm coming on the pitch, I'm thinking, oh, I just don't want to be the one to let everyone down. Like, done so well up to this point. Yeah, you just try and grow into the game. You know, coming on as a defender is tough sometimes and just trying to get up to speed with the game straight away. And they had a few chances. I think I ended up heading one off the bar actually when they've whipped it corner in at the front stick.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going in, so I've like stuck my head on it, just hit the bar and come out. And then obviously they get the goal and heartbreak. The fans were on the pitch and stuff. It was crazy. But
just going back to that bit about you hitting the bar, I kind of put a question there. For a split second, you must have been really anxious that, you know,
yeah.
This could have been a very different podcast if that had gone in.
Oh, no. I remember the ball coming in and I'm thinking like, I think that's going in. Like, I thought, I don't actually think I've seen it back properly, to be honest. But at the time, I just remember thinking, that's going to creep in the front stick, and I'm like, backpedaling. But I was thinking, I'm going to have to stick my head in it. I've just tried to flick it up and over, and it's up to the bar and gone out.
And the game's getting quite stretched, isn't it, at this point? And literally all the action, I think, happens in that game once you've come on the pitch. So, you know, lots of chances for both sides, and Yorker managing the game really well. But then, obviously, like you said, disaster strikes and Rochdale score. I mean, I felt, as a fan, once Henderson crossed that ball in with the outside of his boot, I thought we're in trouble here. Was that,
yeah,
was that similar
fair.
From your perspective?
Yeah, it was an unbelievable ball, wasn't it? Outside of the foot, and I was the same. Once you see the ball going up over your head and you're turning, I just thought, oh no. Like the way it was like curling towards a far stick.
And particularly it was going to as well, you know, their main goal threat. And obviously we all know about the fans spilling on the pitch, but, you know, they didn't put a board up. So, you know, as a supporter, I had no idea how much time was getting added on. You know, I thought there wasn't a lot of... You know, some games you have people running the clock down. There's a lot of injuries. Other than substitutions, there wasn't much sort of stoppages. So I had no clue as to whether that goal was on the end of the 5 minutes added on or whatever
it might
have been. What did you as players know? How long was
that?
That
was that was the first thing I did, run straight over to the ref. But obviously, he was trying to get everyone off the pitch and stuff. So it still took a while after I first spoke to him to find out what was actually left to play. And I was saying, look, there's got to be more time added on, surely. And he said there'll be 1 minute from when we get everyone off. So after that, I was just going around to everyone saying, look, 1 minute left, we'll get a chance. One more chance.
Famous last words. I mean, it's incredible. But was that because of what had gone on in the season, the amount of goals? And we almost scored, don't we? Like, that was the kind of mantra,
yeah,
wasn't it, all the way through?
I just had a feeling that we would get that one more chance. And like you say, with the goals we've scored and the players we had, there was always someone going to be able to create something in that time. And I just think, probably learning from experience, is the worst thing you can do is panic and try and rush things in them final stages. And then, you know, before you know it, the game's turned scrappy, ball's going out of play and the game runs down. But the ending to that game was surreal, really. It's still nice to look back at now.
It is surreal. I mean, I've watched it back, you know, hundreds of times, the highlights. And I think it's got one of those that, I think someone said to me the other day that if someone wrote that for a Hollywood script, they'd send it back saying it was too far-fetched. I mean, it was
mental.
It was mental. So you're going around. Do you think the fact that their fans came on the pitch then, do you think that sort of almost helped you guys and that you, you know, there was a little bit of time to sort of communicate with each other?
I think so. Just saying, like, look, we're going to get one more chance. Just set it up right, don't rush it. Keep doing what we're doing and something will come. I remember saying to the gaffer, I'm going up front.
And what was his reaction?
To be fair, I think he was just like, yeah, just go, like, we're going to have to create something somehow. You know, because things just happen so quick at a time. You're just like, obviously everything's going on in the background and stuff and you're just trying to stay as calm as you can, but, you know, you ain't got long left.
And when that ball comes in from Ryan and you get your head on it, what's sort of going through your head then? And
to be honest with you, when it first came across, I was going to head it to the near post and try and score myself, but I just thought, I'm just going to have to head this back across, obviously, towards the far stick, and, you know, like it happened, it got palmed out, and then Stoney puts it in, but originally I was going to head it front stick, but I thought if I missed, then it's definitely done, I'm going to have to go back across.
Yeah.
And yeah, thankfully it worked.
And obviously, because the net doesn't bulge, does it? Because you've
No.
got a player there. Did you sort of see that it'd gone well over the line? Were you looking at
From
the
my
linesman?
angle,
What?
yeah, from my angle, I was like, that's in, it's surely in. You know, I thought the linesman actually put his flag up pretty quickly after I watched it back, but at the time it seemed to take forever to like get the decision. And then, yeah, as soon as you see goal and the scenes, it was unbelievable.
Joe Gray on the edge of the box. Joe Gray still got it. Feeds it through to Stones on the right hand side. Stones pulls it back. Goalkeeper stays with his foot. Still not kept out. To the back post it goes. Callum Howe heads towards goal. Scrambled in. Is it over the line? It's there. We've done it. We've done it. We have done it. York City have done it. Now it's their turn to invade the pitch. Can you believe that? We have done it. We're going back to the Football League. Oh, my word. The scenes. The scenes. Get in there! The promised land is here for York City.
What was that feeling like once that goal had been given, and what, you know, particularly after the fans had come on the pitch and all that carnage and the whole season to culminate in that moment? What was the feeling like when it had...
You know what? I don't even think I could describe to you the feeling of that moment when you're just running down the side and you're seeing all the York fans going mental, and you know, everyone's got their families there and they're jumping on the pitch, and yeah, it was surreal.
And Josh Stones as well. I almost sort of thought it was poignant that he scored the goal, really. You know, it was a redemption story for him. You know, how the previous season ended with it being Oldham and the abuse he was getting and stuff. And it was a tough sort of start to the season as well for him. You know, he still wasn't getting in the side, but for him to kind of the way he developed and a comeback, really, I suppose,
100%.
he was fantastic.
His time at the club when he first came was tough for him, and I think a lot of people forgot how young he actually was, and he had a lot of pressure on his shoulders and expectation, and he got a lot of stick. You know, Stones is one of the most honest lads you'll ever meet, and one of my best mates in football. And yeah, we had a few conversations through the season. He gets frustrated. He's like, as you can see on the pitch, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and I think it was fully deserved for him that moment after, you know, all the hard work he's put in and what he's been through and stuff to keep his head. Like I say, he's a young lad, and people probably don't realise that at times.
And I think he really looks up to the likes of you and Paddy McLaughlin as well, doesn't he? He clearly sort of takes advice on board, whereas probably some young lads would probably maybe have a bit of an ego and not want to listen to the older pros and stuff like that. So it's quite refreshing that he does take that on board.
There's none of that with him. No, he's like I say, he's just an honest lad who wants to do well, and he'll always put the team first as well.
And lifting the trophy, is that the highlight? Is that the peak of your career?
Oh yeah, 100%. That was right up there. My wife was there with my little boy and mum and granddad and stuff. So yeah, definitely one of my best memories.
The celebrations were obviously long. They were wild. They were
Yeah.
taken in many York pubs. Trip to Spain as well. Open top bus parade, which was fantastic. What do you think is your overriding memory from those celebrations from that week? What will you take with you?
The evening after we lifted the trophy and then going back to the ground on the bus, and all the lads together for a bit on the bus, having a bit of time together, enjoying it, and then going back to the ground where all our families got invited back to the ground up in the lounge. So yeah, we had a good few hours in there as well, all families together, and then we ended up out that night as well, which was, you know, especially with the fans, everyone going crazy, people standing on the bars and stuff, just like no rules. It was unbelievable. So I think the day was definitely the best. Well, yeah, we ended up for a few days after that still staying out, a lot of us in our kits still. So we had a good go at it. But I always say, like, you gotta enjoy them times because you work hard for them all the way through the season, you know. And in football, you don't really get too many of them times. So you gotta make the most of it. We had the time away in Ibiza, which, you know, the club was covered for all of us, which was brilliant. Yeah, we definitely. And the bus parade, sorry, that was unbelievable as well. Fans turning out that day, that was special.
And did you sort of during that week after, did you sort of ever sit down and reflect and think about like the history you'd all made? You know, that the likes of that title race will probably never come around again, will it? And the fact that you came out on top in it as well.
I suppose not at the time, really. You don't take it all in, but then even for weeks after, you've still got people coming up to you that, you know, probably you wouldn't expect to know about it, and they're saying, "Oh my God, what about that the other week?" and stuff like that. And then you start to realize, like, wow, it was all over, really, when it was all over social media, the news, everyone knew about it.
And Josh Stones obviously told America about it as well, didn't
Yeah, he milked it, didn't he? He was on everything.
But for you as well, personally, you know, we've talked in this interview about some of the early moments. You know, I know we talked about you got promoted with Lincoln, but I don't think you were quite as established as you were at York City, you know. So for you to sort of have those moments with Solihull where you've lost and in the playoffs with York where you've lost, it must be massive for you as well, you know, being sort of an older player as well.
Yeah, 100%. If you're looking to get promotions in your career, chances are it's not going to be every year, do you know what I mean? You got to enjoy them when they come round, and, you know, all the sacrifices you put in, missing out on things with family and friends and stuff through the year. I feel like when you get them moments, you know, it does make it all worth it.
And has it sunk in yet? Even though we've talked about it tonight, do you still sort of think, oh, it still feels very surreal, not real at all?
It'll always be one of them that you probably look back on and think, like, that was just, you know, you can't explain actually how that went.
No, it's mad. And I think some York fans thought you were going to stay. I think I read somewhere that you bumped into the Scunthorpe manager in hospital and that influenced you to sign for him. Is that correct?
When I first left in the summer, I was expecting to be staying at York, to be honest. But as time went on, things weren't kind of progressing with it. Look, I've got a family to look after, and I put my family first. And obviously, it was a massive decision leaving, and I had a lot of time to think about things. And, you know, it was a tough decision, but I just felt it was the right time for me with my family. And
yeah, and it was nice for you to go out on top as well, wasn't it?
I absolutely loved my time at the club. You know, I'd nothing but good words to say about that club and everyone there. Absolutely loved my time. And like you say, sometimes going out on a high, it's a nice way to end it.
Absolutely. And you know, your relationship with the supporters as well, I think, has always been very close. And you know, obviously, you've got the Magic Hat song, which I referenced earlier. I mean, that must be, I don't know if you've had chance at other clubs or what, but it almost felt like you had quite a close bond with York City fans.
Yeah, to be fair, from when I first joined the club, you know, the fans were unbelievable. Like you say, that song came around probably in back end of that first season and stuck. And like I say, I got nothing but good things to say about the club. The supporters, unbelievable. You know, I'm just glad we got it done for them as well. They all deserved it after the years they've been through, you know, going down to the Conference North, coming back up, struggling for a few years and then getting so close the year before. I'm just glad that we could finally get it done last season.
Obviously, you've moved on to Scunthorpe, where we started this interview talking about, you know, your time at Scunthorpe. Was that something that was important to you to sort of go full circle? And obviously, you'd never got those chances first time around. Is that something that
sort of put right? It's been a club that I've always followed, you know, coming through the youth team. And I think I signed there when I was 13, 14. So I had a couple of years before I got the youth team and then been through the youth team a couple of years pro, but never made it into the first team properly, just on the bench and stuff. So yeah, I just looked at it as a chance to go back where I first started football. Obviously my brother's there, so it'd be nice for the family to be able to come to games to watch both of us together instead of picking who they're going to watch. And there's obviously different factors to things, but going back would be nice.
And there was a few times that you could have played your brother, couldn't have been over the last couple of years, but it almost seems to never quite happen.
No, we had him in the FA Trophy when he was at Gainsborough, and I got left out of the squad that game because I played a lot of games and they said they wanted to give me a rest. So, and then the second time, well, it had been last year when he was at Scunny, I concussioned the game when we played him at home. And then when we played him away, he was actually on loan at Altrincham. And then when we came to play Altrincham, he got recalled by Scunny, so never came about.
How do you think you'd have fared against him?
I'd have had him back pocket, I think, but he'll tell you he'll be scoring.
Well, Callum, thank you so much for giving up your time. I mean, your 3 years at York City leaves a lasting legacy. I mean, I don't know, like I say, if it's dawned on you how much sort of history you've created during your time at York City, but you'll always be remembered fondly by the supporters. And I'm sure if we ever play you in a cup game or something like that, you'll kind of see that come to fruition.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah, I've got nothing, like I say, I've got nothing but good words to say about the club. Everyone there, the fans, everyone at the club, that, you know, the lads that I've been there for years with, or even just last year, a lot of them probably mates for life now, and we still speak all the time. And, you know, you meet people in football. It's a funny game because you obviously spend more time with probably these people than you do your family for a good part of the year. And then before you know it, like I say, I've left now and rarely get to see them. But we'll keep in contact, no doubt about that. And yeah, like I say, I loved it there.
So, massive thank you for listening. I interviewed Callum briefly as part of Paddy McLaughlin's testimonial dinner.
and always wanted to have a full conversation with him about his time at the club. And of course, after the events of last season, it was a no-brainer really to try and get him on the podcast. So really delighted he was able to give up his time, and hope people enjoyed it. This is potentially the last episode in the series. I've still got a couple of contacts I need to follow up, but as ever, if you're able to subscribe to and follow the podcast, you'll be the first to know if any more episodes drop. It's also a good time to tell you a little bit about how York Hospital Radio is evolving. Our service has traditionally been focused within York Hospital, but that's now changed. So we're providing radio services across York on DAB whilst continuing to provide the latest information about York's hospitals. Whereas before, it was strictly kind of trying to provide a service for people in York Hospital. So hopefully I've made that distinction quite clear now. But we're still very much a charity with good health and well-being at the heart of everything that we do. So if you'd like to support us with a donation, you can still do that at the same website, justgiving.com/York Hospital Radio. And then finally, just a heads up that myself and Steve Ovenden, aka the original Yorkie the Lion, we're heading up a series of sort of supporter events for York City called the York City Roadshows. They're going to be completely free. They're going to be taking place kind of here, there, everywhere across the supporter base. And we're going to start in a couple of weeks' time at Pocklington United Services Club on Tuesday the 18th of August at 7 p.m, where we're going to be joined by some special guests and the National League Trophy as well. So if you ever went to any of the sort of Trust social events over the past couple of years, it's got a similar sort of vibe to that. A few kind of subtle changes here and there. But if you enjoyed them, you definitely enjoy these. So do come down and support the first event if you can. It'd be great to see as many people there as possible. And then just finally, thanks again for listening to Hospital Ball. Always really appreciate the comments and everything, and people getting in touch to say how much they enjoy the episodes. And as ever, any previous episodes, if there's players there that you've enjoyed listening to, do comment, because either they'll see it if they're on social media, or if they're not on social media, I always make sure I take the time to kind of forward it to them, so they always know that their kind of time has been appreciated, not just by me, but you, the listeners. So I'm sure there will be some more Hospital Ball episodes to come. But in the meantime, thank you for listening, and see you hopefully on the next episode.